Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Hello and welcome to 1010 Winds at 92.3 FM live on social. I'm Susan Richard and here's what's happening. We are talking live with independent candidate for mayor of New York City, former governor Andrew Cuomo. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Susan. My pleasure.
All right. There have been a couple of new polls since Eric Adams dropped out of the race. One from Quinnipiac gave you a 10-point bump. A second from Fox News showed no real movement, 29% to 28%. And had Mamdani, Zohran Mamdani, up by 5 points to 52%. Today, we got this, as reported in the New York Post, newly released report from Gotham Polling and the city AARP found basically that if Sliwa quit the race, it would be 44.6% voting for Mamdani, 40.7% saying they'd back you, but that was with a margin of error of 4 points. So basically, you had a shot. So here's the question. Either way, what any of these polls say, you still clearly have to work to get Curtis Sliwa's voters to come on board for you, whether or not he drops out of the race. So your 60-second elevator pitch to them. Go.
First, again, thank you very much for having me. I think voters are going to get there on their own. Curtis Sliwa is not a viable candidate in this race. It's going to come down to me or Mamdani. It's going to come down to a traditional Democrat, and I'm a Democrat, and versus what they call a Democratic Socialist, which is really a socialist. That's going to be the choice. And they're going to know that Curtis can't win the race. And I don't think people throw away their vote. You know, we saw this in the primary. There were people who had 18 points in the primary, wind up at like 3. People who are at 8 points wound up at 1. Why? Because once it becomes clear who the two viable choices are, people tend to select between them. And that's why you see in the polls, when it's just me and Zohran, it's basically a dead race.
So during last Thursday's debate, and we're going to take a deeper dive into all the topics, including affordability and public safety and all that. But first, you have been talking a lot on the campaign trail about qualifications, and you brought that up during the debate. Mamdani countered your argument that he's not qualified by saying this, quote, "What I don't have in experience, I make up in integrity. And what you don't have in integrity, you could never make up for in experience." Well, them's fighting words, so we want to give you the chance to respond.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cute line. He's very good at cute lines. He's a great showman. He's a young fella, but he's sort of the old-time Paul, smile, tilt your head, and if you're smiling, everything sounds good, and cute sound bites. You know, he's a perfect TikTok candidate, and so much of politics now is TikTok and social media, etc. So I don't take anything from him on his political expertise as a political candidate. But Susan, there is no there, right? There are no proposals that would make any difference in any New Yorker's life. And he has no capacity to actually implement or manage anything. The qualifications... This is not running for legislator. This is not assemblyman, senator, city council person. You're running for mayor. Mayor is an executive position. You have to run things. This is a 300,000 employee budget, a 300,000 employee organization, $115 billion budget. Do you have any management experience? Do you have any qualification experience? Have you ever built housing? Have you ever managed a project? Have you ever dealt with the Congress? Have you ever negotiated with a union? Any given morning, there could be a hurricane. There could be a flood. God forbid, there could be another 9/11 attack. Are you anywhere near qualified to handle any of that? And this is a 33-year-old who never had a job. Son of millionaire parents. God bless him. He didn't have to work. But he didn't. In the assembly, passed three bills, which is like nothing. Worst attendance record in the assembly. So, you know, this is a serious, serious job. I was governor. I know what comes up on a day-to-day basis. I know how frightening it can be. You have 8.5 million people's lives in your hands. And he is just not personally competent for the job. And none of his proposals, all great slogans, freeze the rent, flying buses, free groceries, great slogans, great, except none of it will happen. And that's my problem with this Democratic Party overall, because this is a microcosm of the tension in the Democratic Party.
Right. We're going to definitely talk about the whole democratic socialism. I guess the thing is, and you say that he's the perfect TikTok candidate. What is it, though, about this whole issue of likability? There was a CNN poll from a couple weeks back that had you at a negative 17% likability. What is that about, and does it matter?
I don't know what it's about. I'm sure people can find him more apparently likable. You know, likable. First of all, how do they know if I'm likable or not? They don't even know me. But I think they're responding to he's smiley, and whatever he says with a smile, and he's apparently likable. When you look at me, do you say likability? No, I'm big. You know, I happen to be Italian. I happen to be a serious person because these are serious jobs. And frankly, I am in a serious mindset. We've gone through a lot of scary stuff in this state. And I am a serious person. So I think that's what they're reacting to. But I want to be serious. I want to have a serious mayor. I want to have a serious governor, you know. Yeah, we can have a funny city council person, a funny assemblyman. Fine.
Do you think that part of the issue is that you may still have, and we're not here to relitigate this, but that you may still have basically the two scandals of your administration, the nursing home situation during COVID and the sexual harassment allegations that were made against you, which were not prosecuted. Do you think that maybe that sort of hanging over a bit like a cloud? And do you feel at peace with how you've addressed that? Or do you feel like there's anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, let's talk about this. No, I don't think that's what it is. because there has been a conclusion and facts there, right? There's no open innuendo that someone has to wonder what were the facts. On the allegations, I said the day that report was released by the Attorney General, I said, this is politics. I've been in this game a long time. I started with my father. I was 18 years old. I said, this is politics. It's false. I did nothing wrong. And you will find out when the facts come out. It then took 5 years. I had to go through it with five district attorneys, Democrats, Republicans, up in the 4 years, witnesses, depositions, under oath. At the end of the day, I'm dropped from the cases. There's no there there. I paid a very heavy personal price. My family went through heck because of it. And there's no there there. Did I learn a lesson? Yes. Number one, be hyper cautious always. Any comment you make can be taken differently. There is a level of sensitivity, cultural sensitivity, that is so high for some people. And it doesn't matter if you didn't mean it that way. If they hear it that way, it's offensive. And I change my behavior. I won't even kiss anyone on the cheek unless they initiate a kiss on the cheek, you know. I'm not going to say that's a nice red sweater. I'm not.
But that, it is.
It happens to be, but... yes, I learned that lesson, but at too high a cost. The COVID, I am very proud of what I did and this state did during COVID. People want to say, well, people died during COVID. They did, and it was horrific. And we were the first state that had it. So it was the first time New Yorkers and the country actually saw how terrible it is. And people died in nursing homes in horrific situations. There were no visitors. You can't go to say goodbye. We're trying to set up these computer, Zoom connections with the family. Everybody's wearing PPE. It was a nightmare. And I still have nightmares about that. And people died, 80,000 in New York State, 1.2 million in this country. We followed federal regulations. There have been 800 investigations into this. No one said we did anything wrong. Obviously, I followed the best medical advice that I could. I'm not a doctor. I wasn't making these decisions. But we had literally the best doctors around the world. Was it politicized? Yes. The Department of Justice did an investigation. We just find out that the Department of Justice Inspector General has a new finding that the investigation was politically motivated by the White House. This was during Trump, remember. And refers two people for prosecution for starting a political investigation. So, yes, it was widely politicized. Yes, it was widely publicized. Yes, it was horrific. And if we could do it over again, would we do it differently? Of course. This nation learned a lot through COVID.
Yeah, let's talk about COVID, because on the eve of Yom Kippur, you issued an apology to the Orthodox Jewish community here in the city. And it was specifically had to do with having restricted large gatherings, religious gatherings during COVID. And I thought to myself, why is he apologizing? Like, I mean, it was a disaster. We had we saw these overhead helicopter images of them digging graves at Hart Island. We had a field hospital in Central Park. We had a U.S. Navy medical ship docked in the Hudson. We didn't have a vaccine. We had veterinary hospitals giving regular hospitals their ventilators. I mean, it was like, so why are you apologizing for that? And what do you say to criticism that people are saying, oh, well, he apologized because he needs that vote?
Look, I apologized. Why do I apologize to any person who thinks I may have offended them, even though I didn't? If people are upset, you know what? I think it's the better side of grace. I didn't mean it. It wasn't what you thought it was, but I'm sorry that you felt it. You know, that's one of the things maybe I've come to later in life. It doesn't have to be logical. These are emotions. These are emotions. Well, your emotion is illogical. It doesn't matter. An emotion, by definition, can be illogical. It's my emotion, and acknowledge my emotion. And if the Hasidic community felt that they were somehow unfairly subjected to restrictions because we had restrictions against large religious gatherings, if they felt that was offensive to them, I apologize. By the way, the Catholics were mad at me. the black churches were mad at me. Everybody was mad during those restrictions. But the Hasidic community, there was an angle that I didn't think of. They said that people could have interpreted the restrictions against the Hasidic community as a reflection on the Hasidic community and a stigma on the Hasidic community that those regulations were because they were Hasidic. And I said that obviously wasn't the truth, mm-hmm. but I'm sorry, I should have communicated better and differently. It had nothing to do with the fact that you were Hasidic or Catholic or a black church. Those were the restrictions for everyone.
Right. All right. Let's talk issues. Affordability, which is the buzzword for this election cycle. Mamdani promising things like a rent freeze, free buses, free child care for children 6 months to 5 years, all sounding very attractive to a lot of people. So you've touched on this a little, but let's dig deeper. Do you disagree with his plan to fund these things via raising taxes on wealthier New Yorkers and corporations, or do you disagree with the proposals themselves?
The problem is right. The solution is wrong, right? Oh, is a new issue that he discovered affordability. Affordability has been an issue for 50 years. My father used to talk about affordability. The whole issue is the middle class getting squeezed, right? That's what it has been forever. In the Trump administration, affordability, eggs and gasoline were high. And remember, President Trump campaigning said, the day I'm elected, the price of eggs are going to come down and the price of gasoline is going to come down. You know, nobody asks how. How do you do that? You know, how do you create more eggs? But in this trite political world we're in, it was enough for President Trump to say, I'm going to bring down the price of eggs. And it showed that he was connected to the problem. So affordability. What are you going to do about affordability? Zoran says, I'm going to freeze the rent. Sounds great. A great expression. Three words, freeze the rent. You must be talking about me, and you're going to freeze my rent. No, actually, I'm not talking about you. He's talking about 25% of the housing units in New York City that happen to be rent stabilized. So not market rate units, not a unit that happens not to be rent stabilized, nothing for a homeowner, nothing for a low-income tenant, just the 25% that happen to be rent stabilized, and they're frozen for a period of time, and then they go up. And the increase, when they do go up, includes what the increase would have been, right? So you then get hit with an avalanche when the rent increase goes in. So no, it doesn't make sense. Free this, free this, free this, free this. Well, how do you pay for it, Zoran? Well, the state is going to pass a tax on every corporation in the state, and the revenue raised is only going to go to New York City. That's his plan. And we're going to raise taxes on the corporations, and we're going to raise taxes on the wealthy. The governor says that is not going to happen. I am telling you, as an 11-year governor who passed every budget on time for 11 years, they haven't done that since then, who passed more legislation than any governor, it is impossible. No legislator in Buffalo is going to raise taxes on Buffalo corporations and send the money to New York City. It would be an ex-Buffalo legislator, right?
So let's talk about your housing plan, which includes, this is from your website, building more housing across all income levels, leverage public land for development, including underutilized city-owned lots, improve the quality of life in NYCHA housing, and protect renters and keep families in their homes. So A, more housing across all income levels, like we need more fancy high-rises, or what do you mean there?
I was a housing and urban development secretary under Bill Clinton. I built housing all across the nation. I started building affordable housing in New York. I was in my 20s, believe it or not, East New York, Brooklyn. I know housing. Our problem now is we have a 1% vacancy rate. There is no supply. There is no supply. So landlords charge whatever they want, because if you don't rent the apartment, the person in the elevator behind you is going to rent the apartment. Build more units. Build them quickly. I believe we can start 80,000 units in 100 days.
Where's the money coming from for that?
There's a variety of sources that we have already identified. There is funding there. And there are private sector housing opportunities.
So basically incentives for developers, but then with the stipulation that these would be rent stabilized apartments, or how
these would be quote unquote affordable housing units, right? And then the affordability has a range of affordability depending on the project and depending on the subsidy.
And so is that like, remember the Mitchell Lama housing where it was like for 25 years, like is there a time limit on that? Like how does that work?
Different varieties. Mitchell Lama was actually a great program, state program. Mitchell Lama were the legislative sponsors. That's where the name came from. But yes, Section 8 housing, low-income housing tax credit, tax abatement, free land, but we give you free land and you have to give us a tax subsidy. Was a program that I started that worked very well in the state called 421A that gave a tax abatement. But it is not that we don't know how to do it. We haven't had the capacity to get it done. Why? And this is not just New York. This is a statement on the Democratic Party. Somewhere along the way, we forgot that government was actually supposed to do something, Susan. It's not about talk. It's about doing. And the reason why people are angry at the Democratic Party, in my opinion, nationwide, places like New York, you haven't done anything that made my life better. Senator Ted Kennedy, God rest his soul, before I ever ran for anything, I was a young guy, he said to me, Andrew, if you ever run, when people walk into the ballot on election day to reelect you, they have to know one thing you did that changed their lives. One thing you did that changed their lives. Government is about changing lives. We haven't been building housing. Why? It's hard. There's NIMBY. Right. You have to have a political fight. You have to know someone who can put together the project financing. You have to deal with the unions. You have to negotiate with the landlord. It's hard. Yes. But that's the skill of the position, right? That's what you're hiring when you hire a mayor or a governor or an executive.
So what about NYCHA? What are you going to do there? Because so that we don't see another incident like, remember, a couple weeks ago with the Mitchell houses in the Bronx, when like a slice of the building came tumbling down and that could have really been a disaster. So should that building come down? Like when you, so when you were HUD secretary, you had the HOPE program, correct me if I'm wrong, that involved tearing buildings down. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so is that what should happen with some of these NYCHA buildings?
That is very impressive that you knew there was a HOPE program.
I have done my work.
You have. The HOPE program, I implemented all across the country. The Chicago Housing Authority was the worst in the United States. This was Cabrini Green, Robert Taylor Holmes. They wrote books about it. They did movies about it. There are buildings. We made mistakes when we built public housing. Very high rise, high density, clustered together, hard to find transportation to get into the city, to get into jobs. That was the Chicago Housing Authority. And we knocked it down. And we built all new mixed-income communities, less density, middle class, mixed in, home ownership mixed in. That's what has to be done. NYCHA, some of these buildings are 60 years old. You don't patch up a 60-year-old building. It's cheaper and better. Knock it down, build it new. There's all sorts of available land on NYCHA projects because they built them in what were called super blocks and with a lot of green space within the complex, which was somehow supposed to make up for the density. But there is available land within these developments. So knock down the old buildings, build new ones, and also build additional new units to increase the stock.
And figuring out a way to, because you got to move the people out, right?
Temporarily, right. And then you have to move them back. And again, oh, that's very complicated. Yes, but that is also the job.
Right. Minimum wage. Mamdani wants to raise the minimum wage to $30 an hour by 2030. You have said raise it to $20 an hour by 2027. So where do these numbers come from? Is 30 not doable? Like, what's the math here?
The math is this. I raised the minimum wage to the highest in the United States of America at $15. And people told me, impossible, too high. We phased it in. We had a carve out for small businesses. We did a whole economic analysis. Because the last thing you want to do, you raise the minimum wage too high, too fast. People lose their jobs, right? Congratulations, we raised your minimum wage to $20. You show up for work and the person says you're fired.
Right, or prices go up and
that's
the
right.
Consumer pays for it.
So we raised it to $15, highest wage in the United States, minimum wage, and states followed us. I now want to raise it to $20. I believe, same way as $15, we can handle 20. Businesses can handle 20. We can do carve-outs and protections for small businesses. He wants to go to 30. Yeah, why? 30 sounds better. Well, then let's do 40. Let's do 50. Let's do $100 minimum wage.
Right. I mean, the reality is $20 an hour is only $40,000 a year.
Yes.
You cannot live on $40,000 a year practically anywhere in this country, but certainly not in New York City.
100%. 100%. But 20 in phase one is the highest we believe you can go without closing businesses or eliminating positions.
Let's talk jobs. During a recent appearance on ABC's The View and in other interviews, you've been asked about your affordability plan. And the first thing you say is jobs, jobs, jobs. And then they don't give you any time to elaborate. So you have that time here. So what exactly are we talking about with jobs?
Democratic socialists have basically been running this city for the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, right? Bill de Blasio was basically the beginning of it. And part of the mentality is we're anti-business. Business is the enemy. Wealthy people, they're the enemy. And we're going to make your life as difficult as we can if you stay in New York Corporation. And we're going to raise taxes and we're going to raise regulations. And we don't really want you here. I worked for 2 years to get Amazon to open a second headquarters in Queens. I'm a Queens boy, but I can say a lot of businesses don't want to go to Queens. They want to be in Manhattan. Amazon was going to go to Queens. Susan, 25,000 jobs, average salary $150,000 on a parcel of land that had been vacant for 40 years. Socialists said, no, we don't want Amazon coming. We don't want, because it's corporate welfare, because we offered a tax incentive. Of course you have to offer a tax incentive. You have the highest taxes in the United States of America. Nobody's going to come here and open a new headquarters unless you give them a tax incentive. So there has been this anti-business mentality. You have to change that because the businesses are leaving. They're going to Texas and Florida. They're finding other places. They're not going to put up with it. And literally, it's where I was as governor. I should be the chief marketing officer as mayor, saying to businesses, we want you here. We want to grow with you here. Tell me how we can partner. Can I give you a low interest loan? Can I hook up a CUNY program or a SUNY program where we train your employees? But you have to create jobs because New York is about opportunity. That's why people came here. And if you want me to stay, and I'm a young person, 18 years old, I have to know that there's a future for me here. And there's a job that will lead to a better job and a better job. And the tech sector is growing and AI is growing. Get them growing here, not San Francisco or somewhere else. That has to be job one, is making that economy strong, because that is the engine that drives the train.
But it's challenging, especially for some of these younger folks who are supporting Mom Donnie, who hear things like free buses and free this and freeze the rent, and right, the things that would that they might think directs me impacts me directly. I get an immediate benefit if my rent-stabilized apartment is frozen, or I can take that bus for free. And even on your website, you do say that you liked the pilot program with the one free bus in each borough. So it's not like that's like a terrible thing, but that the full bus thing is just not doable. Right. So my question is, how do you talk to that younger generation who's hearing these things from him that might impact them immediately? And you're talking things that are big picture, longer term, frankly, not as sexy a message.
Yes. And here's the challenge for me. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to defraud. What he is saying is a fraud. Let's say with freeze the rent, because that's the sexiest of the sexy, to use your word. 25%. I'm going to freeze your rent. Oh, me. No, not you. Oh, I thought you said freeze my rent. No, not you. You didn't read the small print. It's only for those people in rent stabilized, and 25% of the total number of units in the city are rent stabilized. Oh, so it's only for 25%? 1 out of 4? Yes. Well, how about the other 75%? Nothing. Oh, and for those 25%, when you say freeze the rent, you mean forever? No, I mean for a period of time, and then the rent is going to increase. And the increase, by definition, will have to include the years where there was no increase.
So you're saying they're only hearing the soundbite. They're not hearing
the full. Hearing the soundbite.
Okay.
On the fast buses, just to be clear. Fast free buses. How do they go fast? I don't know. I mean, you get out and you push. Free buses. First of all, half the people don't pay the fare anyway, right? Free buses is controlled by the state. There's nothing to do with the mayor. The mayor can go out there and say whatever he wants. It's up to the state, and it would cost $700 million. How much is that? It's more than we just raised from congestion pricing. It has been done before. What happened is the buses became mobile homeless shelters because the homeless got on the bus. They could ride free all day. They can't be kicked off. So they became mobile homeless shelters.
You know what? Let's get into that because I do want to talk about public safety, which really is the second hot topic on the campaign trail. So let's start with mass transit, with the subways, and with the homeless situation. I remember, you know, during COVID, when you were shutting the subways on the overnights, you know, for cleaning, and they had dedicated teams that went like to the last stop because that's where people would be if they were still on the train, and they were encouraging, they had to get those folks out of the train anyway. But what is the plan? Would something like that be in place where you'd have dedicated teams to deal with the homeless in the subways?
Susan, how smart was what we did during COVID? You had, and it taught us a lesson. What happened during COVID was there was a period in COVID, talk about misinformation, and remember when they said you could get COVID by touch? So everybody had to wash their groceries right. And everybody. When they said that, the next day, the nurses, the doctors, the police didn't show up for work because they wouldn't get on the subways. Because if you can get COVID by touch, I'm not going to go through the turnstile. I'm not going to hold the pole. Okay, so we had to show the subways were safe. What do? I find a contractor. They have this special Viricide. We figure out a way, incredibly, to spray down every train, every station, every night. These trains hadn't been cleaned in decades. Right. But to do that, we have to get all the homeless off the trains. And Bill de Blasio was mayor at the time, and he didn't want to get the homeless off the trains. And this had been an ongoing battle, one of many. He said, well, they have a right to sleep on the trains. Which, by the way, they don't legally, and it doesn't make any sense for them or anyone else. But now we were going to spray this Viricide. I said, if they're on the trains, they could be in danger.
Right.
Okay, long story short, he agrees the NYPD will get everyone off the train. Every night, every homeless person off the train goes to a shelter, gets assessed at the shelter. Who needs mental health assistance? Who needs substance abuse assistance? Who needs a social worker?
Right. So do we need to bring that back?
You can do that. You can do that. And public safety overall, look, crime is a problem. Crime is going down. No, it's not.
All right. So I want to ask you about that because Curtis Liwa told us that the NYPD is cooking the books on crime stats. And he pointed specifically to the theft of Amazon packages, which he says the NYPD won't even take a police report on. Mamdani says, trust the stats. So what do you say?
Mamdani says, trust the stats. This man, if his mouth is moving, he's lying. What he said about the NYPD, trust the stats. He said the NYPD is racist, is wicked, is corrupt, is a threat to public safety.
Which he has since walked back.
Which he has since walked back. But you know what? You can't. You call me a racist and wicked and corrupt threat to public safety. You're going to defund the police, disband the police, which happens to be the written position of the Democratic Socialists of America. It's in their gospel, abolish jails, in their gospel, and he said it 20 times. Rhetorically, over and over and over. Now, all of a sudden, he trusts police stats? Baloney.
So, but you've called him dangerous.
Yes.
That's a very loaded word. Is it his policies that are dangerous? Is he dangerous? Is he any more left than Bill de Blasio? And was Bill de Blasio dangerous?
He is dangerously inexperienced, is what I said. Okay. Is he more left than de Blasio? Yes, certainly. Bill de Blasio was left and even more, I think, unqualified and ineffectual. Zohran is a lot like de Blasio. They were both basically advocates. They're politicians. They're rhetoricians. De Blasio had 6 employees. Zohran has 5 employees. Both very far left for effect. Not that any of it could be real. It's all ideological. I'm painting utopia for you.
So this whole rift within the Democratic Party, do you liken the farther left wing, the Democratic Socialist wing, let's say, to MAGA for Republicans? The Republican Party, I think in most of our observation, has gone full on MAGA for the most part. Is that what's happening with the Democratic Party? And how can there be a meeting of the minds?
That, great question. And I think the seminal question. They are analogous. You have a polarized nation and far right MAGA, far left Democratic Socialists, both enemies of the moderates. Moderates, the moderate Republicans are scorned by MAGA. Moderate Democrats, scorned by the Socialists. I'm a moderate Democrat. By the way, how I became a moderate Democrat, I don't even know.
Because?
I was a crazy liberal Democrat, first state to pass marriage equality, highest minimum wage, paid family leave, the most progressive laws, son of a crazy liberal Mario Cuomo. Mm-hmm. But now the left went so far left, now they call me a moderate. But I believe the extremes are the enemy of the parties.
The enemy. That's the a strong enemy. Word, too.
Yes, because why don't people trust the Democratic Party? Because you're not speaking to me and my issues. I'm a working class, middle class, working family. I was the base of the Democratic Party, and you're not talking to me. You lost your seat at my kitchen table. You're not talking to my issues. And number two, you don't get anything done for me. Back to Ted Kennedy. Get something done. What have you done for me? What have you accomplished? How did you touch my life besides taking money out of my pocket in taxes? That's the real problem for the Democratic Party right now. And the far left makes that worse.
And the challenge is basically you got to convince folks that it's better to vote for your boomer dad, you know, that it may be a generational thing, that it's that your you know, tail end of the baby boom father really cares about you and can really accomplish for you.
Yes. The bottom line, which is supposed to be the question, right? The question is, who is going to actually help me? Who is going to get something done? All these politicians yammer, promises. Who's going to get something done? I am going to get something done. My whole life has been about getting things done. Oh, he's not as likable. You're darn right, because getting everything done is a fight. And I got more done for this city and state than any governor in modern history. Building a new LaGuardia airport, a war. It was the worst airport in the United States of America. Everybody laughed about it. I say I'm going to knock it down and build a new airport. I get protested. Save the old LaGuardia. It's historic. And we don't want to lose the old. Kennedy Airport, Mario Cuomo Bridge, Kosciuszko Bridge, Second Avenue Subway, Moynihan Train Hall. Legislatively, marriage equality. Marriage equality, everybody was against. They thought that we lost our mind to say that gay people should get married. Catholic Church condemned me. But we get it done. And vote for the person who's going to get things done for you.
All right. I want to talk about the situation in the Middle East, which is, you know, very important to so many New Yorkers, whether they be pro-Israel or pro-Palestinian. You have made your support of Israel perfectly clear. Many of the pro-Palestinian demonstrators in the city have been these young people, particularly on college campuses. So what do you want to say to them specifically?
look, everyone is pro-peace. Everyone. Every rational human being who has been watching what was going on is pro-peace. And it went on too long. And there was too much pain. And there was too much carnage. And the hostages went through too much. And too many people were killed. Yes, all true. Everybody wants the same thing, peace. That does not justify, I'm sorry, step two, some people say Israel is to blame. Some people say Palestine is to blame. Okay, disagree. Agree to disagree. That does not justify anti-Semitism in New York City towards Jewish people. We have the highest level of anti-Semitic incidents in New York in the United States of America. We have the highest Jewish population outside of Israel. I never believed I would have seen this day. I'm glad my father's not here to see this because it is so repugnant to who we are as New Yorkers, as Americans. What this city said was, we don't discriminate against anyone. That is the founding premise that of this entire enterprise. That's why we're the laboratory for the American experiment in democracy. We don't. I don't care if you're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, God bless you, short, tall, black, white. And if you discriminate against anyone, we're all going to hold you accountable. Because if you can discriminate against Jewish people, you can discriminate against Italian people, against Hindu people. So our covenant as citizens is no tolerance for discrimination against anyone.
And so what do you say to Mom Donnie using the word genocide?
I think it is reprehensible that he will not denounce the term globalized intifada. Globalized intifada means kill the Jews. Okay? Imagine if somebody said, kill the Italians. How long would that last, Susan? Kill black people. How long would that last? But kill the Jews, he won't denounce. How not? He associates with a person named Hassan Piker, who said, America deserved 9/11. America deserved 9/11. How do you not condemn that kind of statement, America deserved 9/11? 3,000 people dead, 150,000 people with 9/11 illness, and you won't condemn somebody? Said, and you take pictures smiling. Here's my friend, Hassan Piker. We're going out for drinks and dinner. Shame on you. Shame on you. These are basic New York values that I think he just doesn't understand.
Does Donald Trump, President Trump, deserve some credit for the ceasefire, which is a little bit back and forth in the last few days, but seems to be holding?
Look, everybody nowadays plays politics, and the Democrats hate the Republicans, the Republicans hate Democrats. Nobody will give credit for anything, which I think hurts everybody's credibility. Yes, yes, he deserves credit.
And yet,
let's hope it stays.
And yet you're going to take him on if he as mayor?
I had battles with that man like the only person I have worse battles with than Donald Trump is my brother Chris. Yes, I battled him all through COVID. I battled him whenever he tried to do something to hurt New York. Frankly, I won a lot of those battles. Remember this National Guard movement. This is not new. He did this last time. He sent the National Guard into 20 cities. What city didn't
get?
But
that was during COVID, right? And didn't the governors, wasn't that during COVID?
That was before and after. And sometimes it was to help, but sometimes it's what he's doing now, which is a political statement. So he sends in the National Guard to say, the Democrats don't know how to run a city. The Democrats are incompetent. And that's why I have to send in the National Guard, because we have these incompetent Democrats running Los Angeles and Chicago and Portland. He did the same thing, sent it into 20 cities, didn't send them into New York.
But you deployed the National Guard to help with COVID.
With COVID. But he was sending in the National Guard to keep order because the Democrats couldn't do it. And he said, I'm going to send them into New York. And I called him up and I said, no, you're not. No, you're not. There is no reason to send them here. It would be a cheap political gesture, and we will oppose it. We have the New York NYPD, 34,000, largest police department in the United States of America. We have 10,000 state police and MTA police. We have more National Guard. We have more state police, MTA police, NYPD than we have National Guard. There was no reason, and he didn't send them. Donald Trump is a bully, and he puts his finger in your chest, and 99% of the people take a step back. You put a finger in my chest, I step forward, and I always will for New York, and we actually won many of those battles. Now, Trump has said, write this down, or keep it on the tape, or whatever the modality is. If Mamdani wins, he will take over New York. He will. Not with National Guard. He will take over New York in toto. Remember, the National Guard is just a political show. The federal government, and he threatened me with this at one when we were having one fight, they can close down your airports. They can close down your tunnels. They can take all your health funding. They can take your transportation funding, your housing funding. They can basically bankrupt a city and a state.
So you think he would go that far?
Oh, I think he will take over New York functionally. And he has said it, and he has his rationale. Because Mamdani gave it to him, a 33-year-old, no management experience, anti-police, anti-Israel, anti-business. He's going to let the Democratic Socialists bring socialism to New York. Trump calls him a commie, Mamdani the commie, because he always has a nickname. Right. He has a perfect justification. And plus, it's New York. He wants to take over New York. He loves New York. He's from New York. He'll be President Trump and Mayor Trump.
So then what about this whole idea that he was really pushing for Sliwa to get out of the race and Eric Adams to get out of the race to clear the way for you?
Look, the president is expert at misdirection, right? That's why he has the Democratic Party chasing its tail most days, right? That's why he has the media chasing its tail most days, right? He says one thing on Monday. Everybody then tries to respond to that. Tuesday, he's on to something else. If he wanted to clear the field, it's, first of all, Eric Adams. Well, he's talking to Eric Adams about giving him a job. He never gave Eric Adams a job. Eric Adams dropped out of the race, having nothing to do with a job with Donald Trump. Curtis Sliwa. Nobody voted for Curtis Sliwa. He's on the ballot because the Republican chairman put him on the ballot. The five Republican chair people put Curtis on the ballot. If Trump wanted him off the ballot, it's one phone call to the chairman of the Republican Party. Get that guy to say he's not on the ballot. It's one phone call. No, I think they want Mamdani because politically, it's a national gift. They will make Mamdani the face of the Democratic Party, and it will confirm all the Republican moderates' fears. What? Now we're socialists? Now we're not just left, liberal. Now we're socialists. And by the way, they say scary things. Government should control the means of production. There should be no private ownership of real estate. Think about that, Susan. No private ownership of real estate, according to the Democratic Socialists. That's the American dream of home ownership. Now I can't own my own home? No. Housing is a commodity that will be provided by the government. This is scary. They would run him all across the country and say, this is how nuts the Democratic Party has gotten. In New York, they will pick up congressional seats. They could win the governor's race.
So you're saying it's part of a larger plan.
It's great politics for them. Right. And Trump winds up being mayor, which I think he probably would rather be than president on some of this.
So they're talking to me in my ear, and I have one more thing on a lighter note. So I was talking to Rob Walsh, who was the former small business services administrator for 12 years under Bloomberg and who went to Fordham with you. And I was like, what was he like back then? And he says to me, and I have permission to tell you this, he said, I was Richie Cunningham and he was the Fonz.
I think that's the entire time.
You gotta go, hey, you gotta go, hey. So it got me thinking that it seems like, I think most New Yorkers, we feel like we know you, right? Because you've been in the public eye since—
since I've been 12.
Right,
yeah.
Since you, for your whole life. So the question is, since we think we know you, is there anything about you that maybe we don't know that you want us to know? That was a good one, right?
Boy, that's a take a breath one. I wish you knew my family better. I wish you knew my daughters better. Cara, Mariah, Michaela, because there's so much of why I do what I do, right? Because it's not for us, you know. It's for our children. Everything is for our children. Second, I wish you knew better why I did it. Why I'm running. You just like to be in office. You just want to be a mayor. You want to run for something higher. Susan, I been there, done that. I was a federal cabinet secretary. I was in my 40s. I was with Bill Clinton, Al Gore. I've been on on Air Force One 100 times. I was in the White House for meetings every day. That thrill buzz, that's all gone. I'm afraid for the city. I'm afraid for this Democratic Party. I think we are at a tipping point. I think people are leaving. And I think it's much worse than people think. And I think this Democratic Socialist is the death penalty for the Democratic Party. Because it confirms exactly why people are leaving us. They're not talking about values that matter to you or me or our lives. They're talking about these obscure social issues that don't matter to anyone when I have real problems today riding the damn subway and I'm afraid to get on it at night. And you want to talk to me about some woke issue. And you're putting forth people who have no qualification to actually make a difference.
So in a word, would you say you're running because you care?
This city to me is everything. I love this city. I couldn't imagine being anywhere else. And I'm afraid it's in peril. And my family, my father, my brother in his way, we dedicated our lives to good government and making New York better and civil society. And I spent my life doing it. And to see the city, after everything we've all done, to see it teetering, it frightens me. It motivates me, and it breaks my heart. And I get these young people and fresh face and change. And Yeah, but you know, change can be for the better or it can be for the worse. It's not change is always good. You know, change is risk and it can be a positive or a negative. And the lack of information, just the superficiality of all of this, well, it all comes down to TikTok. And all I watch is TikTok. And if I don't see you on TikTok or you can't communicate it in TikTok, then it doesn't matter. It's a scary place to be. So I wish New Yorkers knew the why more than anything. And I wish they knew the sacrifice of being in public service. What my father, the sacrifice my father made, where 7 days a week he worked, the deal with my mother, he would be home Sunday night at 7 o'clock for dinner. And then he'd never make it by 7 o'clock. All our lives.
And was it sauce or gravy?
It was. Well, it depends whether it was the Sicilian grandmother over or the Napolitan grandmother over. So the sacrifice is so real. You know, for me, my father was failing, and I knew it. And I kept saying to myself, I want to spend more time with him. I want to spend more time. But every day there was another crisis. Every day there was something more important. I'll come tomorrow, Dad. I'll come tomorrow, Dad. I'll come tomorrow, Dad. And then he's gone. And I didn't spend the time because I was doing my job. And I work. I'm obsessive compulsive. I take an oath. I'll kill myself for the people of New York. I will kill myself. But it comes at a sacrifice. I won't make that mistake. I now moved. I'm a half a block from my mother, who's still with us, God bless, 94. Don't tell her I told you. And, you know, I can see her every day. But it's the why this is important. It's the why this is important.
I wish we had more time. We are out of time. Great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Former Governor Andrew Cuomo, live on 1010 Winds at 92.3 FM across our social media platforms, including TikTok, by the way.
All right.
Wave. Early voting starting Saturday, October 25th. Election day is November 4th. You can see all four of our interviews in this series, the full interviews on both Facebook and YouTube. So you want to check those out. And I will talk to you on the radio. I'm Susan Richard, 1010 Winds at 92.3 FM. Thanks so much for watching.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them and designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating canvas sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speedtest. So baseball fans are connected to the Fall Classic from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, more towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever before. T-Mobile has you covered. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Best mobile network based on analysis by Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, first half 2025. See details at T-Mobile.com.